I think before we start, we're all Chelsea fans here. We all have our own opinions. We all have our own feelings towards what's been going on, and we'll just have to respect and agree to disagree with whatever we say. I think that should be stressed.
Except for you and me, Collins.
Yeah, no, you can fuck right off, Matt.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's only fitting to start this episode off just with a big, deep sigh, because, oh man.
Oh, you are teeing this up so good.
Enzo, to me, looks like a more agile, basically a young Chess Fabregas.
A Rolls Royce, man. Gotta sell it.
Messi is the Jorginho of international football. That was a dumb take.
Welcome to another episode of Flag Stays Down podcast, Cup Season Edition. We got myself, Andy. We got Parker. We got Matt. Matt, how you doing?
Could have hoped for a better result today, but all in all, it did not stop my day from being productive and relatively fun. But yeah, it was a good weekend. Just kind of did some stuff around the house. Alan spent a fair amount of it with you and your family. So that was definitely enjoyable. Got to go to a 2-year-old's birthday party, which as a new parent, that is quite the experience. Cause you pretty much just play merry-go-round with kids. We had kids ranging from all ages to like 6 months up to 3.5. So as long as somebody's got eyes on a kid, you're good. Everybody's just kind of passing their kid off. So it was fun. But yeah, just a new experience, but definitely just kind of fun. But yeah, and then just kind of back to work on the basement today and just kind of getting stuff ready for little man's first birthday party. So just staying busy, but, yeah, it was good to get out and get to the library and watch the game. So I'm happy I was able to do that. But yeah, not the result we wanted, but that's the way shit goes sometimes. So, but other than that, we're doing well. Parks, how are you?
Yeah, that's the way shit goes when you trot out a bunch of 22-year-olds, right? Like you get some fantastic performances, you get some terrible performances, and then probably somewhere in the middle between fantastic and terrible is what we saw today. They weren't, I didn't think they were terrible. I think they were bad, but still a lot of those glaring errors that like to come up in big moments. So that was unfortunate. In one word, I am tired today. I woke up in Oklahoma City at 4:30 Central Time AM so I could hop on a plane and get back before the game today. So I was supposed to be on a 9:30 AM flight, which would have been right smack dab in the middle of that game, and with terrible Wi-Fi on planes, I didn't really want to chance it. So I switched the flight. I luckily got upgraded to first class because no one was on my plane, because no one wanted to be on the 6 a.m so that was great. Came back, watched the game, and then did some stuff, and then crashed for a few hours and took a little napski. So I love my job. I think my job provides a lot of fun and cool things, but spending my weekend in Oklahoma City is not on the highlights list of things that I love about my job. I do this once a year and it's fine, but it is not ideal by any stretch of the imagination. So at least they're nice people. At least they're good folks, but definitely don't really want that. But next weekend I get to go to London, so there's quite the balance there, right? Unfortunately, I won't be able to see the Chelsea Brentford match, but I'll still at least be in the city on game day, so I'll try to catch a go to a pub and catch the match with some fans and meet some new friends, promote the pod abroad, right? So all in all, the weekend was fine. A win today could have definitely pushed it over the threshold, and we did not get. So, Collins, man, how are you? How's the weekend?
Well, I'm glad you just reminded me you were going to London. That means Chelsea's going to win next weekend. They only win when you're in town.
But I usually get to go to the fucking game, and so I haven't seen a loss at Stamford Bridge yet, and I don't get to see the game, so I can't promise anything.
All right. Well, if we lose, you're not invited back.
That's fair.
No,
if they win, you're not invited back.
Yeah. Start filling out those immigration papers.
Looks like I'm screwed. Thanks, guys.
Hope you enjoyed the new house for less than a year.
All right. So, yeah, my weekend. Matt, great seeing you a lot this weekend. Parker, gonna be seeing you this summer, so all good there. But I, you know, got that all squared away, so really looking forward to that trip. Other than that, I don't know, man. It was just the weekend, moving shit around and getting stuff done, and tomorrow having kind of an impromptu take your child to work day, which will be interesting considering the industry that I'm in. But yeah. I don't know. It just seems like the weekend's going to keep going. I'm in a good mood. So, all right. You know, I wasn't in a good mood this morning. Let's see, about 11:30. And Matt, I know you weren't necessarily either. What are our first takeaways, I guess, from the Carabao Cup final loss?
To me, I mean, it was a typical Chelsea-Liverpool Cup performance, right? Like, a lot of very back and forth. You know, I'm usually the first one to kind of go after the officials on this pod. I'm usually right up there. I didn't think it was a poorly officiated game. I think each team had a case for VAR kind of screwing them over. So I think it was fair in that regard. A lot of stuff, like kind of letting some stuff go, which I enjoyed, which I appreciate in a cup final. So I didn't think comparatively speaking, it wasn't the worst officiated game I've ever seen compared to what we've seen over the last, you know, 6 to 8 months, especially in the Premier League. So I was happy about that. But I think for me, the big thing was, like, we played them tough. Liverpool had a relatively easy couple weeks leading up to this match. Looking back at their schedule, I mean, they had Burnley, Brentford, Luton, like, not exactly powerhouses that they're going up against, and we're kind of on the heels of a very taxing Man City game. But, you know, we fought hard. Ultimately, it didn't go our way. It is what it is, right? Like, we can't change it. Nothing we can really do. But, you know, we fought them for 119 minutes. Right, like, you saw everybody on both sides were gassed. It was a good cup final, trying to take bias out of it, being, you know, Chelsea fan. If I was a neutral, I would have thought that it was a really good game, really fun game, an exciting game.
It's a game of inches. Like, they're 120 yard pitches, and it's a game of inches and centimeters. Yeah, I'm a very statistical minded person of probabilities and things like that. And, you know, you think about things like expected goals and situations like that. And the Cole Palmer shot on goal from point blank that happened to hit, was Kelleher, whatever the fuck his name is. It hits his arm, just luckily, you know, throws an arm out at it. Gallagher's shot that hit the inside of the post and comes off. Like, it's a game of inches. I mean, if we score those two goals, we're up to nothing. And I know Liverpool has chances too, right? I'm not just looking at this in a bubble in a vacuum of, you know, only us had chances. But for the first 90 minutes, I thought we had better chances. We both had a goal that went in that got called back. Kind of split the baby there. I didn't think Nico was offside, and the Verge first, you know, goal that was impeded on or whatever. I've seen a lot of those go away. the most notable that comes to mind is when Erling Haaland scored against us in the first City match, the 4-4 game, where he literally unmoved somebody. And then when he got dragged back, he got a penalty called, but he literally started the fight by saying, you go over here. And then he ran forward and then we dragged him back. And then it was a penalty. So I've seen things similarly get not called or called in the wrong way for us. So I thought we were even there. And then when you break down chances, man, I thought we had better ones. Like, thought the boys played really, really well. I thought they played hard. Especially in the first 90, I didn't think that there was a lot of tactical issues of the way we set up. Thought we defended good, not great. I was telling Colin pre-pod that one of my biggest bugaboos, I guess, was our defense kind of gave the ball away a good amount. Malo Gusto took kind of poor touches and took the ball out of bounds 3-4 times. De Sassi slipped and then didn't have a lot of places to go with the ball, so I had to kind of kick it long to Nico, and then Nico didn't even get a touch on it. It was over his head. And you know, those are turnovers in my mind, right? And it's attributable to Liverpool's press. And I know that they're one of the best pressing teams in the world. So you got to tip your cap to that a little bit, but gosh, I thought we played well. I thought we played well, good enough to win. And the ball didn't bounce our way. I know that sounds like a cop-out excuse, but it's sport, man. That's what happens. And, we just were not the beneficiary of a little bit of luck that went our way. So it's a tough one. It's one that you can see a lot of where the overreaction comes from, but I choose not to participate in it because that match could have easily went our way and it didn't. And that's the way the ball bounces.
Yeah. First of all, great takes by both you guys there. My first initial takeaway from that match is it is now glaring what our needs are in this team. You need a left winger. Raz isn't it. And if you're not going to trust Mudryk and give him that run of games he needs, he probably needs a loan at this point. But then you need a solidified left winger. And you need a clinical finisher. If you're going to play Gallagher at the 10, then you need somebody else. You need to change the formation. You need to do something. And Gallagher needs to be playing back as a six or something, but you need a number 10 who can finish the ball. You need number 9, Nico Jackson, who can finish the ball. We know Cole Palmer can, and hopefully that left winger coming in would be able to. You get those two positions squared away, and I think we are competing for European spots. Without a doubt. But I will say my second reaction was a little bit of an overreaction. I'll say, Verge scores. My mind goes to the manager. My mind goes to some of the players. Ready to be all fired up on this pod. When Aiden listens to this at some point, he will be mad at me, but, the match ends. He starts crying because of the Chelsea loss, which I made sure to verify several times. He was pretty upset about it. So I had to take the step back and explain, just like Parker, what you said, it's sport. This is sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes you have the better chances, sometimes it looks like you're going to win and you don't. And sometimes it's to a team that you really don't like. That happens, but we still have the FA Cup. It's still cup season, as Parker said pre-pod. We've still got the league to play for. You know, there's spots that we can jump there. And ultimately, we've got a lifetime of watching this club. So we'll be back in a Carabao Cup final. I don't know when, but as a Chelsea fan, I'll be there. So that was just, I just wanted to share that I had a change of heart, guys.
You know what this kind of like, it feels like a little bit. And I was thinking about this before the match, because the loss didn't bother me in the sense of, I didn't really expect to win. I mean, the odds were against us. It's Liverpool. They just beat the shit out of us. I know that they didn't play the same team, and you can say this is a watered down Liverpool team, but still Liverpool, still a good squad, still solid players. You can't really discount that, but this feels like, and Matt, you'll appreciate this. This feels like a villain backstory. This feels like, you know, the how we became what we became, feels like we're watching that. And in 2-3 years, when you've got Caicedo, who I thought played brilliantly, by the way, I thought he took the ball off of Liverpool a fair amount of times and like really stopped a lot of like breaks and presses from happening. When you see him like putting in bone crushing tackles in 3 years, and you're like, why does he play so pissed off? This is why. Like, you're going to see some of the results of this in a few years, and this feels like our villain origin story a little bit.
Almost like we're kind of building that chip on our shoulder, brick by brick, loss by loss at this point. But, you know, you end up getting to a point where you've kind of had enough, right? And I think we're kind of slowly starting to get there. But I would agree with that. Like, this is something where you can easily look back and be like, that's why they would play like that. Like, that's why they have that kind of attitude. This would be a very good, very good benchmark to kind of go against.
And when we beat, like, when we beat Liverpool in a final in 4 years, when we beat them 6-0, people are like, why does Chelsea keep going? This is why. We lost 3 straight to them. And gosh, in some of, like, I don't want to say favorite because they all ended in loss, but like really, really good matches, like some really solid football matches. I mean, I forgot it went to 11-10 last year. I knew we lost in penalties. I forgot it was 11-10. And I forgot it was Kepa who skied the best. Like, I forgot that. And it showed you how little was between the two teams. You know, we drew them twice in the league that year. We drew them twice in cup finals and lost to them on penalties twice. I mean, that close.
Well, you know, two of those cup finals are part of this run of six now. Six domestic cup finals at Wembley we have lost. There's people saying, there are people making the case that this is a bully issue. This is a Pochettino issue. This is a player's issue. You know, that there's a standard being set of underperforming. I just want to, I'll start this topic off. That's such bullshit. At this point, you have to delineate about 2 years ago. You got to separate the two groups out. This, what we're seeing right now is not something that happens in the world of footy just about ever, except maybe MLS, where you strip an entire team down. Literally, wait, what did we keep? 3-4 players from last year? You literally strip the entire thing down and you bring in all new, inexperienced young players. You can't say that this group has anything to do with losing a cup final 6 years, you know, 6 tries ago, 3 years, 4 years, whatever that happens to be. It's literally none of the same players. Zero of the same players. Zero chance it's going to be the same coach at this club. And it's a brand new set of owners. And the entire front office staff, back office staff has all left. And we brought in new people there too. The only thing that carries over are the fans and the badge. So I appreciate the stat. I'm a stat guy. But it's such a bullshit agenda-y stat to me.
Like, yeah, we've lost the last six. It doesn't, it's not a good look, right? Nobody wants to lose six domestic cup finals in a row. Not great, but like you think about everything else that was accomplished in those years, right? We're just looking at one small thing. Like it was only City last year that won the quad. Like it's tough to do. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. Like I think the idea that we have to win everything every year, although I would love it, we kind of need a dose of reality. Like it's not sustainable by any stretch of the imagination. It's great as a one-year thing, but trying to do that when you like, and let's say we're focused on other things, right? The league, the FA Cup, Carabao Cup, Europe. Like if we were in that position, there's a lot of other priority stuff, in my opinion, right? This year is a little different because we don't have Europe. So it carried a little bit more weight. But the other years, like that wasn't the priority because we were playing in Europe. And I don't care what club you are, that's always going to be priority. So I kind of take that with a grain of salt. It is what it is. Like somebody has to win, somebody has to lose, right? Let's not take away from the fact that that you have to get there first, right? I think that speaks more to the consistency. Like, yes, we have been in those finals. We haven't won them, but we've been there. And it's actually kind of ironic because was it last week or maybe 2 weeks ago? I just watched the 30 for 30 on the late 80s, early 90s Buffalo Bills, who went to four straight Super Bowls and lost. Everybody was talking about their losses. Let's think about everything that you had to go through to even get there year after year after year. Right? Like that alone is impressive enough. And I kind of feel the same way about, you know, looking at that stat. You still have to make it there. You still have to battle however many teams in both tournaments to make it there. It's not an easy ask. And it depends on the draw. I feel like as Chelsea fans, we usually get a shittier draw and we end up going up against like more Premier League teams than probably some other teams do. It seems like a tougher road for us, and yet we still find a way to get there. So I take more out of us getting there than I do the losses.
That's fair. And it's also probably one of the most hotly debated topics in all sports for all leagues, all time, is would you rather win once and then be bad for a while and then win, you know, but get there and win, you know, do what Leicester did and win it and then not really be relevant, but at least have said you won it, or do you want to be consistent and be in the conversation for it? And that's not settled. Like some people feel differently about it. Some people want to just win. They don't care about anything else, they just want to win. And some people prefer being consistently in the mix, having a chance to compete and having a team that's still worth cheering for instead of having the super highs and the super lows of, oh, we're terrible, or oh, we can do this. So it's a super, super interesting debate. I think when you look back before the six straight losses, Wembley was kind of considered a fortress of ours. Can also make the argument that Stamford Bridge was considered a fortress of ours as well, right? When we played at home, we were hard to beat and people didn't want to come to Stamford Bridge. They were going to hear about it. And we held ground, especially in like the Mourinho era, we held ground a lot at home, and Wembley felt like a second home for us. And we did well. We went to cup finals and we won cup finals, and that was kind of our DNA. So I understand why fans are upset, because this feels different. We're getting to finals and losing. We're not coming out on the other way, on the other side of this. There's a thousand reasons why that's the case, and not all of them are Pochettino. Like there is a thousand reasons why. And I think you know, without getting too much into the managerial debate, I think a lot of our team had to be stripped down and built down from the ground up and rebuilt. I think it was the errors of the past 3-4 years that created the situation that we were in. And, you know, we've talked about deadwood a lot on this podcast about clearing the deadwood. We still have deadwood on this team, and we've cleared a ton of deadwood off of this team. So if we were more consistent about handling our squad and kind of doing what was right and not letting the players manage the club, we would be in a different position today, but we're not. And so there had to be some like pretty drastic measures that were taken. The problem with those drastic measures is they don't result in automatic success, which has caused what we're in right now. I think the strategy is still sound, and I still see a lot of what that vision can be, but it's going to not feel like Chelsea for a while. It's going to not feel like our history or our DNA. And I don't think it's the ownership's goal to not make us that DNA, you know, bring us back to that DNA. I think their goal is to find a way back there, but to find a way back, they've got to clear out a lot of the room and find a new pathway there, because there was not a clear sight of it when Todd Boehly and crew inherited the club. So it's still that rocky road, and it's still tough as fans, because we still have to reconcile with losing cup finals to Liverpool 3 times in a row. It's just not a fun feeling. It's not a fun place to be in. But I still think that those guys, when they're playing at age 25, 26, I think we still have a really fair shot of competing at the highest level, both in Europe and the Premier League.
And I feel like we got to, like, kind of what you were saying, are we have to step back and look at where we are as a club. Making it to the cup final was fantastic. If you zoom out and, you know, Matt, as you were saying earlier, you know, looking from a neutral perspective, we're a club that finished 12th last year. We're in 11th, I believe, as of today, game in hand. So you just randomly pluck out an 11th or 12th place team from 5-6 years ago, and you're like, oh, goddamn, they were in a cup final? It's impressive that we got to where we got, but, you know, you can't look at that necessarily in a vacuum. There is the history of the club, and, you know, we are used to winning trophies. But, you know, you got to, what was the word I used to delineate? You got to do that. But I will ask the question, Parker, you didn't want to get into the manager debate. He didn't have a great game today, I don't think. Substitutions, man management, tactics, all that good stuff. So before we get into, well, I guess we'll finish the topic with this question, but what do you make of Pochettino today? And, you know, in this cup run, in terms, you know, how has he done?
How's he done today or in general?
Well, focus on today, but, you know, a lot of that can carry in or be justified, right? So however you want to address it.
I thought the first 90 was great, as I said earlier. I think where he's getting a lot of the criticism is Liverpool made 3 subs. When was it? It was like the 87th minute where they put on a bunch of kids. And I think everyone expected Chelsea to kind of take it to them. And they did in the final 90, but then to start off extra time, they didn't as much. I think that's where you can draw some criticism. What I think people failed to realize is we didn't have a ton of options on our bench. we made 4 subs. We obviously had one and then one for the extra time, right? So had 2 in hand. Sanchez, Gilchrist, and Bettinelli were the unused subs. So I don't really know where you go with that. I still wish we played Alfie Gilchrist. I don't know why we played Trev, especially if the game goes to penalties. I uh, I don't want Trev shooting, and I want my captain out there, Benny Chills. Also, funny moment where he didn't really know who to give the captain's armband to, because there's no Silva, there's no James, there's no Gallagher, and he's the vice captain. So who gets the armband in that situation? So Enzo got it, which was kind of funny. From a tactics perspective, I thought we played them well. I thought we played a game to win, and the ball didn't go our way, as I mentioned earlier. Thought we didn't give them a lot of very clear opportunities to score, and they're a team that scores goals for fun. I know Darwin Nunez and Mo Salah score goals for fun, and not so much Luis Diaz, but Luis Diaz had a fairly good game against us. He was probably their best attacker. But you know, people think like Gakpo is just a complete shit player, and we all know he's not. Like he's still a solid player. Harvey Elliott's a solid player, and their midfielders and McAllister's still a solid player too, right? So they had some good people out there. It's not like they just had a bunch of scrubs. So I thought we played them well enough to win. You can criticize Poch on how he handled extra time. It's fair. It's a fair assessment. But if we played for penalties and won penalties, then people wouldn't be criticizing it. It's complete hindsight to me. So it's you live and die by the strategy, and it didn't go our way.
I just relooked at the subs while you were talking, Parks. Who else are you gonna put? You put all your attacking options out there. The only thing I could see for Trev instead of Gilchrist is in a moment like that, if it does go to pens, and I haven't seen Alfie take a pen, I don't know if he's ever taken one. That is a very large stage for a kid to have to come into and possibly be faced with that opportunity. So I think in that case, you go with the more experienced player. I'm not saying Trev has had a lot of opportunities from the spot, but he's at least been around for a lot of those. So I think he'd be able to handle that maybe a little bit better than Alfie. And I'm obviously like the biggest Alfie fan in the world already, but I think in that situation, I don't mind that. Again, you put Trev on the right, I would kind of prefer that over De Sassi. At least in this scenario, and then Malo Gusto shifted over to left back, right? Like, I don't know if I know Collins. I know you would be a big fan to see Bobby Sanchez just take one from the spot. I know you'd be all for it. My guy Bettinelli, love to see him take one too. But again, I love the. Sorry, sidebar. I love the injury comparison between the two clubs. Like, yes, Liverpool has injuries, but guess what? Their injury list, half of them are people that you've never even heard of. Like, you can't put them and say, oh, look at this list of players. Shut the fuck up. We have legitimate, like, first team players gone out, not just, you know, what's his nuts, who wears number, you know, 73 from the academy squad. Like, that can fuck right off. Anyways, I thought it was actually a well-managed game. I like Nkunku coming on, Mudryk, Noni. Like, yeah, you needed options. So I had no problem with it at all. I thought he did it. Everything as well as he could have, given the options that were at his disposal.
Yeah, so I'm going to start it off with that. You know, you mentioned Bettinelli, you mentioned Sanchez. Why do you need two keepers on your bench? He consistently lists two keepers on his bench. Why? That's a wasted spot. You're telling me that, you know, somebody like Dujuan or Duan Richards, the guy from Jamaica we just signed, 18-year-old, he couldn't have at least made the bench as somebody who can run around. Yeah, Leo Castledine, he's been in the squad previously. Throw him out there. Where was Cassette? Is he injured? You have
Cassette options. Can't play, I don't think, because he was
on because he was cup tied to Lester.
Yeah.
But like you have options with the PL2 squad. And Matt, I know you and I were talking a little bit about that earlier, and I was thinking of the U18 squad, just played 3 matches in 9 days. U21s haven't played since last week. I don't understand why you can't call some of those guys up. But then looking at the game, I mean, we came out so poor. And I can't necessarily pin that on the manager, but it's a pretty consistent thing. It seems like we come out in matches timid, not ready to play. But again, I can't directly tie that to Push. So I'll stick to the subs here. Alfie Gilchrist would have been great. You needed somebody with energy, somebody who had legs, somebody who will run for absolutely no reason to replace Connor Gallagher. I'm not saying put Alfie in the midfield, but you sub him on, then you move Trev, who is a converted midfielder. Move him to the mid. But Jurgen Klopp outcoached Pochettino there. It didn't matter who was injured. It didn't matter who was available in their squad. He brought on guys who play in the PL2 squad, who run and are just out there, and they know how to play the game. And he brought fresh legs on. We kept dead legs on. And it showed. At the end of the match, it showed. And gosh, I can't remember when that quote came out. It might have been the post game, or maybe it was to ChelseaFC.com. But Pochettino was asked about that second half of extra time. Why did it seem like you guys were playing back? And he said, well, basically we were. Decided as a team that it was probably best for the game to go to penalties. What a mentality is that? You are, Parker, as you mentioned, you're bossing them with chances, far better chances. I didn't feel like Liverpool were going to score at any point outside of set pieces. Why not go for it? You got 15 minutes. Just go. You got dead legs, then give me 60%. Give me whatever your 100% is right now. Go get a goal.
I completely agree, dude, because I've never been a fan of scared tactics. Like, I've never been a fan of sit back tactics. And we watched this happen in the City match. Bring on pressure, invite it, and City broke you down and got a goal late. And so I wonder if that was kind of floating around in his mind of what just happened, because like, I think you could bring on Trev and Alfie and, sub off Enzo or someone else and play 5 at the back, right? Like kind of rework your system a little bit to just sit back. And we did that with Cassette and we brought on Trev. It was like Trev for Palmer or something like that against City, where we then sank 5 back. If you're going to do that, do it, right? Like if you're going to don't half-ass it. And so I didn't think Chills needed to come out. So that was where I kind of criticized that, but I don't like scare tactics. I think, and this is where I criticize them, right? It's mentality of, if that's how the team felt and your manager isn't willing to push you over the top and say, no, this is nut up time. This is where boys become men time. This is where you cement your legacy time. This is where we play for 15. We've trained hard. We work hard. They're dead. We're dead. Bring it. Like, let's fucking go. Right. Like, that's where, like, again, boys become men. That's where people grow up real quick and you see what you're made out of. If as a team, you're not willing to do that, you're not going to win cup finals. You're not going to win big games, because it's scared mentality. It's just not. Teams are too good to just allow them to kind of come at you. And if we were attacking them like we were in the 85th through the 110th minute, they would have been scared. They would have been sinking back. They wouldn't have been able to counterattack, because when we control their third, then when they boot, then we were still in control, because Enzo and Caicedo were winning those balls back. Our defense was winning those balls back. We were able to stay in their zone and pressure them. At least we would have been on the front foot, right? Like, at least we would have been doing something. And then if we give up a counterattacking goal, I can live with that. I'm not lying to you. If we give up a counterattacking goal of Gakpo or whoever kind of trounces through and he's by himself and he slots it, fine. But at least we were attacking and we tried to win the game. I don't like sitting back. It's never been me. It's never been my style of play. It's never been who I am as like an athlete. It's just not right to me.
And with a young and impressionable squad, that worries me. That worries me that is a standard. You know, that's something that something's being set here, being established of, okay, you guys don't want to, like, okay, I got you. What concerns me a little bit more in regard to that situation is who was your captain at the time? Enzo?
It was Chills until like the 115th minute. I'm trying to look when he got subbed off. I don't remember. But I mean, it was Chills for most of the game.
But I mean, you look at Enzo Fernandez, World Cup winner. Team went deep in a lot of games in that World Cup. You're telling me he's not telling Pochettino, hey, no, like we go, we win. Or the reverse, Pochettino not going to Enzo, Europe, World Cup winner. Where is your heart in this? Like, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be that check and balance in the leadership of the team between the manager, captain, vice captain, whoever the leaders happen to be in the team. There needs to be somebody who says, no, 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 no. We're not doing that. Dead legs or not. Like, that's not okay.
It was the 113th minute when he got subbed off. And I couldn't agree with you more, because it is not a democracy. You know, we've all been in practices where people are dead, or games where people are dead, and you try to find that extra gear. You go David Goggins on someone, right? You search for those devils, you search for those demons, and you try to find a way to get through the pain and enter that extra gear. That is not a democratic decision that we all collectively make together. That needs to be driven from the top and instilled in everybody as, no, there is no option B. It's not how we do things here. There's only one gear and we go. That's what's needed. That's what we're missing. And I have to believe that some of that, again, villain origin story, some of that comes from losing. Some of that comes from being fed up of losing matches like this and looking inwards and saying, we got to fix this, man. We got to fix this. Like, off season, Enzo and Caicedo and Gallagher and crew are looking at each other like, what do we got to do to be better? And it's like, we got to instill some of this that we know what we're doing.
Yeah. And I hate to keep going back to it, but if the manager is not going to be instilling that, if the manager is coming out publicly after the match saying, yeah, we all voted on it. There are a lot of good free agent managers this summer. A lot. And some in that elite level. Last year, it was slim pickings. This year, teams are going to be feasting with managers. Pochettino needs to watch himself.
It's going to come down to FA Cup, man. I mean, without Europe next year and without an FA Cup win, like, I hate to put all the eggs in one basket, but it's going to, you got to be judged on something.
So let me ask you guys, I'm not sure if you got a chance to to look it up yet, but there was an article in The Athletic this week about how financially it's better for Chelsea to miss out on Europe this upcoming year. You know, either we qualify and we tell UEFA, hey, we're going to sit out a year, or we just miss out on it altogether. Right now, we are only abiding by the FA's, whatever their financial fair play is, rules. And those were not amended until, I believe, after the first of the year. And so all the 7-year contracts are on the books for 7 years for us with the league. UEFA is getting rid of financial fair play and replacing it with FPS, I believe, financial profitability and sustainability, where you're only allowed to lose up to £80 million per year. And the amortization is only 5 years. And with Chelsea not participating in any European competition this year, nothing gets grandfathered in because we would be newcomers to that. So basically, sum that all up. If we were to make European competition, that would impact our spending power and our ability to live within FPS without having to sell a Conor Gallagher, a Broya, a Colwill, you know, one of those homegrown players. So does it make sense to miss out on Europe next year and spend lightly anticipating going into Europe the following year?
I don't think we have a...
How do I want to answer this?
What?
Does it fucking matter? Like, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, does it really fucking matter one way or the other? If we... So, I know we're doing everything that we need to for FFP. That's fine. Then you got other sets of rules. At some point, we're going to get hit with something. Right, like we kind of already have. There haven't been any penalties yet, but eventually every team is going to get hit with this. Every team will. It's just a matter of when. Does it make sense to get, I guess, hit early, or does it make sense to get hit late? I don't know. I don't even know that we need to have that conversation right now, like given where things are at as far as where we'd finish. Yes, if we, correct me if I'm wrong, if we win the FA Cup, that's also European qualification. Again, if we win the FA Cup, if we get to the final, right? Then we have to play the final. We all know the history. We've already talked about it. We would also have a chance to do that in the Premier League if we move up to fifth. Not out of the question, but not the most likely scenario as of right now. Is it even really a conversation topic? Like, could it happen? Maybe, hopefully. But to me, it's like, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah, I don't even think it's going to be an issue for us this year. Like, we're not super close to it, so. It's just not like we should avoid this. Like, I don't think we could get there if we tried. So, yeah, part of me kind of wants to see how that plays out just for the sake of chaos. But it just doesn't feel like it's going to be as impactful. I mean, to Matt's point, everyone's going to have to figure this out. Chelsea's not the only ones that spend. And Chelsea's not the only ones that spend inappropriately. Chelsea is relatively responsible with how they balance the books of money out, money in. We all know those stats. We don't have to talk about them again. So, you know, we try to be in compliance with all those rules. And I think we do a relatively good job of staying in compliance, which allows us to spend a lot and sell a lot. Ask Man United and ask Arsenal how badly they feel like they got fleeced by the sales of the players that we gave them to finish his past season. You know, we sold them for a lot of money and got them off of our books. I don't like that there's different rules for different competitions and different grandfathering rules. The fact that we have been a European mainstay for so many years and we're not there this year means that our, you know, theoretically we're losing out on 7 years of benefit, where we would be, if we had 7 years of contracts grandfathered in year one, it feels a bit unfair that you have to completely restructure things based on someone else's rules. You play by one team's, one organization's rules and not the others. Seems a bit ridiculous that that's the case and that there's not uniform rules of how that gets accounted for. But they're allowed to do whatever they want. So all I know is we're not the worst defenders in any of those categories. And you know, teams are worse at spending and worse at running losses and have been worse offenders than us throughout history. And so if we are all on even playing field, granted they'll have some grandfathered in rules, but eventually we'll all be on even playing field, we'll be fine. We've always run our team in a way that is built for some stuff like that. So I think we do a better job than others.
So I think it's a much more real possibility than what you guys think. We're 4 points out of seventh. With Liverpool winning the Carabao Cup, that means it's now the Conference League spot goes to whatever place in the Premier League, I believe sixth. Now, if a top four team wins the FA Cup, that's another one. That's seventh place. Again, 4 points out with a game in hand. It's possible. And if, honestly, if we're going to be qualifying for Europa, no, not even Europa, it's Conference League. Yeah, if we're qualifying for Conference League, I don't see any benefit to that. You know, you go and you win the whole thing. I think the total cash prize for the Europa League is something like £12 million. Financially, it's not worth it for us to be in that competition. So I think you take the L, call up UEFA, you say, nah, we're good. We're not going to participate in this. You take the whatever the financial hit is, the 1 year ban. I mean, if you're going to be outside of their compliance anyways, then you just say, okay, well, we're self-reporting. We'll take our 1 year ban this year. And then the next year you go and you fight for Europa, you fight for Champions League. Now, if a miracle happens, we get into Europa spots or in somehow, some way, make up 17 points and make it into a Champions League spot, then you just got to eat it. You can't back out of that. But for the Europa League, yeah, take that 1 year ban. All right. Well, boys, we did not run a man of the match poll, but I'm curious now with some time to reflect. Who's your man of the match?
I've been kind of back and forth with some ideas on that. I would like to preface and also give my man of the get the fuck out of here. It's going to be the same person. My boy, Conor Gallagher. He had a fantastic match. He was so close. Hit that ball off the post. He had that one-on-one opportunity. Oh, I mean, the man works hard, and he sure did today. But he's also my man to get the fuck out of here because you gotta finish that one-on-one. I don't care if he's not a natural striker. He can put the ball in the back of the net. Gotta finish that. And he had multiple chances on some others too. One of those has to find a way. So he is, for me, he is getting both.
That's a very fair and solid pick, Matt. I like that. I thought the top four that played were all very good. I was going back and forth between Gallagher, between Caicedo, but I ended up with Petrovic. I thought he had a very, very solid game. And I think he's now, you know, we talked a lot about body of work and how he was unproven against good teams. And now we've seen him against Villa and City and Liverpool. And he's looked very good. Thought he was, he put in a good shift. So I'm giving it to Petrovic.
Yeah, I second that. You know me, I had my reservations about switching, but no, he's got to be the number one now. He didn't make any mistakes and hasn't in a while.
He faced some like sneaky snapshots in the middle of that game that he could have gotten caught out for, right?
So Matt, you gave us your man to get the fuck out of here. Parker, what's yours?
Jurgen Klopp. Get the fuck. The mannerisms, the faces, the cutting to him. Nothing pisses me off more about a match broadcast when they cut to things that aren't important. But when I'm watching facial expressions of Jurgen Klopp while something important is going on, I can hear fans cheering. Get the fuck out of here. Like I hate the narrative. I hate that so much emphasis is placed on him, and it's just put him in the background and just, you know, let him go away. This was not about Klopp. This was about Liverpool, but this wasn't about Klopp, and everyone made it about Klopp. So it annoyed me.
Man, those are two wonderful options. Yeah, I agree on Connor. I almost lumped Enzo in there. The stupid back heel. Klopp, absolutely. I'm going to go Liverpool fans in general. Matt, I know the ones at Highbury weren't obnoxious, but they were getting on my nerves. And I guess I don't know the geopolitics of England enough to understand why they boo the national anthem every single time. That's weird. I hate You'll Never Walk Alone. It's just the whole Klopp, everything. I don't know. Seems culty. I don't like it. So Liverpool faithful are my man to get men and women and children of the get the fuck out of here.
Just the idea of Liverpool, just the concept.
Yes.
Liverpool, get the fuck out of here.
The whole city, get out of here.
Scousers, Merseyside, just.
I mean, Everton's already getting out of here, so.
That's true.
All right. Well, boys, that pushes us to the hour here. Just a shameless plug. I'm going to be on the Shades of Blue podcast this week on Thursday evening. You can check my Twitter for the info at Comiskey North. You can listen to our podcast too. I'm on that all the time. So is Matt. So is Parker. Well, Parker sometimes, but no, it's good. Check us anywhere you get your podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Flag Down Pod. Boys, any closing thoughts?
You can't win them all.
We should try to win some.
Cheers to that.